Good evening, ladies and gentlefurs. Welcome to the South Africa podcast. You're listening to myself, Ivic Wolf, here. Tonight's guest is Dio, and we're going to be talking to her about some of the things that she's been doing on her side. And our co-host, as always, is Scratch.
Yo.
Welcome to both of you.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on. I realize that it might be a bit difficult at times to do things like this. I mean, even for us, it's always been sort of very interesting to sort of talk about little issues like this, and I know that it's definitely something that could ruffle a couple of feathers here and there.
You know, yeah, it's certainly been a wild ride, and it's always surprising what exactly makes people mad. Like, little informations or, you know, a joke that was once said 20 months ago that's still coming back up is this horrible news. I'm like, oh, God.
So before we get too close into this, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I'm Dio. I'm an American living in the Midwest. I am a millwright, and that means I'm working on large industrial machinery for a living, and I love my job, and I love my family. I've got a nice little house, which is called the Furry Commune. We have a lot of artists and people lived here when they need a place to go and stay. Other than that, I'm a pretty normal person. I like going to furry cons, buying art, and supporting artists. Kind of the run-of-the-mill, boring furry, really.
Depends. Like, we don't necessarily go to cons. We don't have big things like that, so in that regard, you're already miles ahead of what we do.
You'll get there. It took a while for it to develop, and I'm sure as the rest of the world and this furry thing spreads, it's going to be... I mean, the growth is astronomical. It is absolutely incredible to see.
Mm. Yeah, but I just want to go to one of those big ones that I always hear about. I mean, Euroferns just ended... Midwest Fur Fest, any of those like larger cons. Anthrocon, I hear, has become a little bit of a little bit too big for, not for its own britches, but like it's uncomfortably big for newcomers, kind of thing.
It really, MFF is actually larger now per population than Anthrocon, but really? Anthrocon is so spread out, and it is a very big con. You always feel like you are like hiking, trekking into the convention itself, especially if you stay at places like the Omni Hotel. And in the middle of the summer in a fursuit, it is terrible. Recently, Midwest Fur Fest moved to the convention center nearby, so it's no longer just inside the Hyatt Hotel, which means that the convention can expand, and it's really, really cool. Can be so much larger every year to fit the growing population of furries who want to participate. BLFC is one, our biggest little fur con, is another one in Reno, Nevada, and it has seen like almost exponential growth since they started. And those guys are running an amazing convention.
That's the badger with a hat, right? BLFC, like the what do you call it, the con chair,
the mascot or whatever.
No, well,
I think so. I'm not particularly certain about that. I've actually never gone to BLFC. I'd love to go. All my friends come back, they're like, it's amazing, it's the greatest con. I'm like, oh no, next year. It's always next year.
Yeah, it's always a case of like, if you can't always make it, then you're going to have to... You can't attend every con every year. That's just ridiculous.
Oh my God, no. And especially since there's smaller cons popping up all the time. Like, I think there's more than 20 furry conventions. I mean, last weekend, we had 4 different furry conventions around the world going on the same weekend. Like, that's insane.
Yeah. I know that our con actually goes about a week after Anthrocon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could just imagine somebody like trekking all the way from, you know, Anthrocon, coming over to the South African convention and going like, okay, cool, this is tiring.
Yeah, no. I mean, one of the guys from down here went to, well, he was in Japan about a week before our con. Came down here for our con, then went to Euroference this weekend.
Yeah.
And was just like,
yeah.
It's awesome. Oh my God.
If I could make a job out of like going to conventions, that would be great.
Soup's gel. Super jelly at what he's doing.
Yeah. I mean, and like the interesting thing, of course, is that, you know, I mean, whenever you want a guest of honor or anything like that, it's something that I've always been trying to get guests of honor. A lot of the time they're like, you know what, I can't get the plane ticket. If you could, like, you know, cover half the plane ticket, that'd be great. I'm sitting there going like, ooh. You know, rand to dollar exchange rate is possibly the worst thing at the present moment.
Yeah. Shipping merchandise for the raffle and stuff like that already, like, costs us an arm and a leg if it's not done early enough.
Yeah.
All right, we got some commenters here. Trace saying that, yeah, MFF was the largest FurryCon ever last year. Tanya talking about the idea that FurryCon World Tour. That'd be great. I would love to do that. I know exactly where I'd go. As well, like it'd be, what's it, first Euroference, possibly even Camp Feral. Definitely Camp Feral.
Camp Feral, definitely.
Yeah, because Camp Feral, like, yes. Mm-hmm. And then definitely MFF, although I'd probably just die of claustrophobia and crowds.
Mm-hmm. WAF
as well, yes. West Australian Furry Fur Fest.
Oh yeah, that'd be great.
Is there one in New Zealand?
There's one in New Zealand. There's one in Thailand, South Korea. God.
I wonder, can you make a year's worth, 365 days of cons?
Oh, dude.
I think you can make it from weekend to weekend. I think there is one if you're around the world every weekend of the year, pretty much.
Because, I mean, they normally start on Thursdays and then they end on Mondays or something like that.
Yeah,
I know the hours
don't. You'd have just enough time to travel.
Yeah, and no time to recover.
No, constant party.
Oh, dude,
drink
no.
Every day.
It's like the furriest version of a.
Oh. And can you imagine the con funk and the con crud you have after all of that?
Oh my God, you would have to
You'd be like the world's most toxic person.
Yeah, like a radioactive. Just to wash your fursuit every time.
You are a biohazard. You are a walking biohazard.
Yeah, you get on a plane and everybody faints.
They just dump you in the cargo hold.
They're just done. Oh yeah, yeah. You get in like the little dog crate and they put you in the cargo hold.
Well, then you could at least wear your fursuit on the plane, and it would have been.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Actually, Midwest Fur Fest for a couple. I think this is the second year they do. Fur Fest flight, which is a all furries plane flight from the West Coast to MFF. And it's really cool because you can actually wear your fursuit. And yeah, it's like a mini convention on a plane because it takes so many hours to fly from the West Coast to Chicago. And
that's really cool, I have to admit.
Yeah, Mike Fulf is the one who runs that. And it is just the coolest idea. I can't believe that somebody put that together. And it's amazing how creative people are in this fandom. Because he's like, yeah, why don't we just do a big flight? There's all these furries flying from the West Coast to Midwest Fur Fest. So why don't we just all fly together and have a big party plane? And he put it together. I'm like, oh my God. I have no idea how he pulls it off. It's...
yeah.
I can't imagine wrangling that many people onto a plane and then, keeping things from getting too wild.
Yeah,
I
can imagine, depending on the fursona population density, it would literally be like herding cats.
Yeah, it's every seat, they're completely booked. They're very popular. I'm like, yeah, it's amazing, these giant jumbo jets full of furries. Flying to Midwest Fur Fest.
I mean, like one of the ideas that we possibly had as well is because obviously we're keeping our convention in Johannesburg. We've been trying to find ways to, you know, engage the Cape Townians in coming through and things like. One of the ideas that we actually had is to hire out like a train coach, which actually if you hire it out properly, like the price goes down like exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much just, you know, an entire week's worth of traveling, get to the convention, 4 days, then travel back on the train again. It's something that we need to look into because we do want to get the Cape Town Furs more involved. But it's either that or we have a convention down in Cape Town and it's just, it's expensive down that way. It's like we've been looking. And I mean, the con cost pretty much almost triples. If we want to find a place in Cape Town,
wow,
we want to try to keep it as what's the word?
Oh, close, like, to an airport, not too remote, kind of thing.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The places down that way, like that, are within that kind of purview, are what's the word? About maybe 3 hours drive out from the airport, and there's nobody who's going to want to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bit.
That's rough to say the least.
I love the idea of a bunch of furries on a train, though. Yeah. That's, if you pull that off, I am.
Yeah, because
I'm going to need video of this. It's going to be.
I'm imagining a Samuel L. Jackson moment.
Yeah, these motherfucking furries. I was about to say, yeah, because we have the
motherfucking train.
We have a little bit of a problem down here in that our two major furry hubs essentially are Cape Town and Joburg, and that's about 1,600 kilometers away from each other, just about 1,000 miles. So like pulling the con one way or the other will unfortunately necessarily exclude one, like some people from one of those populations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and trying to at the current size that we're at, we can start looking into organizing mass transport this year or something, but even then it's still a little bit of a like we need the money up front and we need the numbers up front as well, so we can organize like a bus or a train or something like that.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, enough about cons for a couple of seconds. Like, I mean, seeing as you're also part of the staff on MFF, like, what is that ride like? I know that, I mean, what's it, 7,000 something people, 8,000 people in like one particular area. It's already bad enough trying to get them onto a plane, but I mean, just when they're there, like, how do you even manage to sort of, like, you know, work around that? How many staff members do you actually have? Like 200?
You know, our staff isn't actually that large. We have a very dedicated team, and everybody does this, it's a labor of love, and all volunteers, and it's, like, I'm still shocked how this gets put together every year, and it's amazing, because every year, the staff has new ideas, they've got more perks for the people who show up, we want to make it more fun, more safe, you know, it's just absolutely incredible. Our directors are amazing people. And there's so much work that goes on behind the scenes. And that has been, I always knew there was a lot of work behind the scenes. And for a long time, I had friends on staff. And they'd be like, oh, Dio, you should be staff. I'm like, why would I work during my vacation? You'll never get me on staff. You can't catch me. And now, here we are. I'm staff. I'm like, oh no, I've gotten old. Because that's apparently what you do when you're an old furry. You start staffing furry conventions.
Define old?
I don't think we're that old. I think all of us are probably in our 20s or 30s.
God damn it, that's not old!
I know! I only feel old when I see, like, little 12-year-olds and they're, like, beautiful handmade angel dragon fursuits, and they're like 11 and 12. I'm like, you are adorable. And they just like look at you and they're like, oh, you know, you're doing this and that, you know, like then you feel old. Oh my God. Then I feel old.
I mean, like, what's it? like we, one of the guys who plays games with us quite often, he's like, I only realized that like he was 16, a long time ago. And I was just sitting there going like, oh my God, I'm twice your age. When I left America, 1993 to 1997, he wasn't born yet. And I'm just sitting there going like, why? People, Scratch, I think right now, if I'm not mistaken, people who are getting to be 18, 19 now, are getting to the point where we were practically already at that age. Almost, very, very close.
Dude, this year, 18-year-olds, this year or next year, like, 18-year-olds haven't seen the previous millennium.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, my God, yeah.
People in our country who can drink and drive have not seen the year 1999.
I think I mentioned Y2K something, and I had this kid, like, what is that? I'm like, well, it was a really big deal way back when, but...
Oh, my sweet summer child.
I'm like, we got over it. We're all right. And you have no idea, because you were not even alive. Oh, my God. And it's actually really amazing that this community is something that young people can participate in. And find this artistic hobby and this inspiration, and that they can find this community and be supported. And it's like everything about furry, I fucking love the furry community, and I love furries. And it always just boggles my mind that all these young people can find this creative outlet where they get the support. You know, you have older artists who are willing to talk with them and share tips, and you know, like when I got into furry at like 13, and I had no idea what I was doing. I just wanted to make fursuits, and at that time they were not fursuits. I was not a furry, you know. These are animal costumes, because I'm very much into movie effects, special things. Just werewolf costumes, you know.
Sure.
I like changing on the full moon.
yeah. You're like, I am only into like werewolf costumes and monster costumes, and it just so happens that I've made like 7 monster costumes, but they're not fursuits. Oh no! Mm-hmm. Like along the road, I'm like, shit, I'm a furry. You make enough fursuits, and then you make a furry character, but it's a character, and you're gonna make a comic or a story. You know, it's not a fursona. Then eventually it's a fursona and you're like, shit.
The onset is quite quick.
Yeah, you're like, there's no longer any leeway in that definition. You're a furry.
So, I mean, just like sort of segueing back a little bit, Halcyon mentions, you know, in their humble opinion, it's something rewarding about assisting on staff and team with conventions and giving back to the community and things like that. Like, what has your experience been since you've been working with MFF?
You know, actually, this is my first year as staff. I've been friends with staff for, oh my God, a long time. But this is my first actual year as staff. So I'm sort of nervous, and I just want to do a good job and be able to support people. And I mean, I'm probably just going to be like, standing around in a vest and telling people not to cut in line, for the most part. Please don't cut in line. Please
vest and hard hat.
Yeah. Actually, I wore my vest and hard hat. That's usually what I wear on my fursuit. So, but this time it will be an official vest and not the official telling people not to cut in line, and behave, and making sure they're not, you know, too rowdy. So we'll see how it goes. I just wanted to be able to do something to give back more. Because over the years, like, I do get older, and, you know, I see how much work goes behind these furry conventions. And I've been going to conventions almost a decade now. So I'm like, okay, it's about time that I stepped up and did some of this work. Because I've been enjoying the fruits of other people's labor for so long. And... you know, they've been putting this amazing thing together, and I just go there and I party. So it's about time, like, you know, I got responsible and kind of, you know, picked up the load, did a little bit of my share. Especially since, you know, getting a little bit older, I'm old. In furry years, I'm getting a little bit older, so I should probably, you know, be doing more. We've got a lot of young people in this fandom. I'd like to see these conventions grow and thrive so that we can give them a space to have fun, like the way I used to have fun at conventions. So that's more so for me is just a way of somebody did that work for me in the past when I enjoyed conventions as an attendee. And they put all that work into making it happen. And I'd like to do the same thing for and make sure that they have a wonderful, fun experience just like I've had for so long.
Yeah, that's really like a really nice altruistic way to look at it. It's like putting in the time that other people have put in to make sure that they had as much fun as you did. Paying it forward, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, I've been to furry conventions for almost 10 years, and I've enjoyed all of them. And so many people work so hard together. And, you know, it's about time that I thought I should get involved and also, you know, be helping out, be putting in the work to make these work and function. And yeah, it's going to be a great experience. I already had tons of friends on staff, so it's not, you know, they're like, oh, hey, it's you again. I'm like, yeah, it's me. Hey, guys. So it's not all that different because they're the same group of friends, but now we're like working. I'm like, yeah, put my work hat on.
So professional.
Yeah. I got to put my professional furry hat on, my regular furry hat.
Yeah, and like, what's it, around about 4 o'clock in the morning, you're just like, okay, cool, I can relax now.
Yeah, I've got to be much, much better behaved than in previous cons, because I had a little bit of a reputation being a party animal. And I like partying. That's where I go to fur cons, is party. So now I'm like, okay, I gotta
be responsible and shit. Ugh.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, oh shit, I gotta be old and responsible. Oh, yeah. God. What am I doing? This is my vacation.
Oof, yeah. Who tricked me into this? Great.
I know. Like, I have my friends. Got you.
I'm
like, oh, no. After all these years of me saying I would never do this and making fun of them.
Oh, now you become them.
I know, they caught me, finally.
there are some really good puns in chat currently. Halcyon saying you're a working class hero. Tanya saying seize the means of production. Nice. Oh goodness, that sounds a lot more like seduction than anything else. It's just, I could just imagine it being done like solely in suit.
Oh god. Hello, I'm your furry staff member, and I can't see anything. Please form a single file line, and if anybody cuts, please tell me. And they, like, give me a poke in the shoulder. You're facing the wrong direction. Yeah. Oh, okay. Turn right around.
The exits are in the sides and the back.
It's like, please form an orderly line, otherwise I will be forced to have my handler do stuff, because I'm not doing anything in this super expensive suit.
Well, I have these huge... big bappy paws on my fursuit. And yeah, they're just basically like giant pillows on my arms. So I could probably give a few cuffs and be like, hey, you get back in line. They're like, ah, these paws are so soft that I'm being smacked with. Oh, they're so soft.
These adorable mittens.
Yeah, these giant adorable mittens. With these little paw pads.
Right. I do obviously like, I mean, beyond all of the other work that you've been doing a large amount of activist work, especially around Twitter and I think online in respect to opinion pieces and things like that. Maybe just talk us through what you're doing there.
Oh my God. So I sort of fell into this. I've always been against racism and Nazism and fascism and this sort of far right extremist violence. But it wasn't something that I necessarily set out to be a paragon or something like that. I've never been one that wanted the spotlight. And now it's sort of like been thrust upon me. I'm like, oh, fuck. This is really weird. Oh, God, it's weird. Like, I remember I used to have like 300 Twitter followers, and they were pretty much all the people I bought art from previously. And like, that was it. It was great. And like, yeah. I could watch all my friends, and now I don't see anything on Twitter. It's just like this stream of everything. Yeah, I get tons of messages and everything gets buried, and people are like, you don't respond to my messages. I'm like, oh God, I don't see anything. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Everything's buried.
You're like number 200 on the list.
Yeah,
it's...
I sent it yesterday.
Oh, I know. I think I've got like... At one point, I had a backlog on Twitter of like 600 DMs. That I had to go through. I know, I'm like, no. I don't want to go through any of these. I'm like, maybe if I just, like, don't respond, people get they ask me something. Mm-hmm. Which they don't. You can't hide. And, there was, I made a joke about 20 months ago, right after Richard Spencer, an American neo-Nazi, got punched in the face on a live newscast. And that became a very funny meme in America. And so I made the joke, can't wait to punch these Nazis, to my friend Art Decade. And, you know, somebody responded with, I can't wait to see shot. And, you know, I asked them, you know, are you implying that you're going to be bringing a gun to this convention? Because that's not allowed, you know. And, you know, not a... People say all sorts of shit on. So I didn't contact anybody else. I just sent a quick message to the con staff security. I'm like, look, I don't think they're serious, but, you know, this person, you know, is implying or saying they're going to bring a gun. I want to let you know just in case. I'd feel really bad if something terrible happened and I, you know, didn't say anything. You know, I'd rather be safe than sorry.
Yeah.
Sent an email to the security staff, and then like I went about my business for a couple months and completely like you know, forgot about it. You know, it wasn't a big deal. And then all of a sudden I get this like crazy letter from the two of the directors on board that owns RMFC. And it is just this like crazy sovereign citizen garbage. And for those not aware, the sovereign citizen movement is a very typically American, sometimes Canadian movement, where they don't believe in the government and they don't believe in that authority. They believe that there's like a secret money storage, that if they do the right things and they like video game the legal system, that they can get like $1 billion from the IRS, amongst other weird stuff that isn't a thing. You might have heard the joke, am I being detained? Because they often don't believe in like police officers and things like that, so they get tased a lot, and it's kind of become there's communities that collect these videos of sovereign citizens getting, you know,
tased.
Yeah,
well, I mean, I guess tased is better than getting shot, mind you.
Oh, definitely. I'm still not a big fan of them getting tased, or anybody really, but so sovereign citizens are just kind of these fringe crazy people, and they play with the edge of far-right extremism, anti-government conspiracies, and sometimes into violence against local authorities, government officials, police officers. It can be quite dangerous, but generally not towards the general public, just towards the government.
Positions of authority.
Yeah. So this letter it has a lot of stuff in it that is typical of sovereign citizen language and what they use, or what they believe the legal system works. like one of the big giveaways is it's signed. When it's signed, there's a red fingerprint next to it, and sovereign citizens often believe that you have to put your blood red fingerprint on your legal documents to prove that you are an actual person instead of like what they consider a shell company of a person, basically like a corporation of a personhood of whatever. None of it makes any sense, but so it's like all this weird stuff, and like the letters, like, you know, you attacked this person and, you know, you're doing this, and it's all absolutely crazy garbage. And, you know, they're going to come take my house and my car and my wages. And I'm like, what are you talking about?
So what, the IRS is involved? You mean a government?
No. Yeah, it's just like, I'm like, what are you, like, you're crazy. So, you know, I took it to my lawyer. My lawyer's like, this is some batshit insane stuff. Like, my advice is don't respond to any of this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. So my lawyer wrote them a response that was basically like, don't talk to my son or my son's son ever again. Like, it's like some, okay. Yeah. And it was like, it was weird. You know, and when I first got the letter, actually, I thought it was fake. Like somebody was trolling me or a joke. I'm like, nobody would possibly write this crazy ass fucking letter and send it to me. So I look up the name though that it's signed with, and it turns out that he owns the parent company that owns RMFC and has a past conviction with sexual contact with a child, minor. Ooh. So yeah, it got really, really dark really quickly. And he supposedly had left the convention and had, you know, wasn't involved in like 2008 when this first came to light. And people were like, yeah, we don't want somebody, you know, around kids with that kind of history. Mm.
Understandably.
Yeah. So then, you know, I talked to a couple people and I eventually posted the letter online, you know, explained what had happened, and everything blew up from there. And it turned out like there was other stuff going on. Like the convention staff had been receiving threats from other people, not me, not anybody I'm affiliated with or close to. So then they've been receiving threats. They had back taxes due to the IRS that they were working out. You know, they had this two sovereign citizens on the board that own the parent company. And then one of them had this past conviction. So that was like a big pile of mess that happened. And the convention shut down and everybody just went absolutely nuts. There was a lot of like, you know, this person's fault, that person's fault. Okay. And I mean, I'm still getting called, at one point, I got so tired of everybody, like, commenting to me, I changed, like, my Twitter name to Con Cucker, because, you know. Yeah, I'm like, I thought it was an obvious enough joke that people would not take this seriously. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I was just so done with this situation.
Turns out they weren't done with you.
No, not by a long shot. Oh, my God. So yeah, Con Cucker, and now people point back to that. They're like, see, she was bragging about murdering the convention. I'm like, oh no, oh my God. I didn't expect you to think that is bragging because it's a joke. Like, you can't cuck a convention. Mm-hmm. It's like, what, 2,000 people that I personally cuck all of them? Like,
yeah.
I'm not even into that fetish. This is really, it's just a joke. Oh my goodness.
Like slapping a company. How do you perform that?
Yeah. How do I cuck the company? So, I mean, it's been a learning experience of what people will take out of context. So I have to be more careful with how I'm expressing myself and what language we're using to better communicate. And that's a good thing. Like, I want to be clear and I want to be open and I want to be able to communicate with people and have them understand who I am, what I'm about. And there's a lot of misinformation. And I don't want to be scary to anybody. Like, it sucks that I'm sort of this boogeyman figure to a lot of people.
Yeah. But I mean, like, how? I mean, from somebody who was just sort of semi-involved and then just, you know, voicing a concern, how do you sort of become the, I guess, figurehead of the entire movement? What exactly happened? What was the transition point?
Oh my God. So the convention closed down, and these groups formed after that were, you know, supposedly in defense of the furry fandom against, like, the SJW menace that kills conventions. And so they put a big effort into this moment to draw on people, like, look, this convention has died because of the evil SJWs and the furry fandom. And you're like, what? Oh no, what's going on? And they're like, yes, this Dio was evil. Wait, hold on. What are we doing? You know, you're recruiting for what? Why do you need this? Like, furry is already a community. Why do you need a community inside a community? So it's like a weird fraternity? No, it's not. Mm-hmm. So it's like, they did this big recruiting drive, and so now there's kind of two groups that are positioning themselves as the, you know, anti-SJW or anti-whatever the solution to the fandom. And, like, SJW is such a fucking meaningless term nowadays. Like, it can mean anything, and people are still throwing it around and bandying it about. I'm like, why are you even saying it? It's just like, now it's just a word for people you don't like.
Yeah.
And so I am a person they do not like. And that's mainly because of, like, I don't tolerate fucking racist bullshit. So I have all these people, they did this recruiting thing, and they're also a bunch of fucking racists. They're like, yeah, we hate SJWs and we want to say bad words about minority people and get away with it. No social repercussions. And I'm like, well, if you say terrible things, you know, there are social repercussions. You can't just ask people not to care about the things you say or the horrible things you do. Like, you know, that's part of the responsibility of free speech, is when you use your free speech, doesn't mean that you have no ramifications, and it doesn't mean that other people can't speak back to you either.
Yeah.
So these guys think that free speech is about not having responsibility over your personal what you say, and it's not about having other people speak back to you. Like, you know, them saying horrible things, free speech, but me saying, dude, don't say the N-word, come down. And they're like, oh no, my free speech, the SJWs are attacking me. I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. Calm down, dudes. Like, just don't be racist. Like, please. Yeah. It's easy. There's a whole furry fandom that you can go frolic in. There's conventions and parties. We have DJs and musicians and artists and all sorts of really cool stuff's going on. You don't have to be racist in the furry fandom. Like, just be furry.
Yeah, and you, and yeah.
There's a lot of...
yeah, and you have, I mean, the right
at the end of the day, it's... Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Go.
You have you have the right of free association. You can choose who you hang out with. Just, like, if you don't want to hang out with them, then don't hang out with them. Just don't make a scene out of it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's, yeah, the whole free association thing, too. They're like, yeah, you know. So I block a lot of people on Twitter because I get a lot of spam and bullshit. And they make sock puppet accounts and, like, re-spam the same shit. So they're like, well, you blocking me is against my free speech and it's censorship. I'm like, no, it's freedom of association that I don't want to associate with you because you're just a fuckhead. Like, leave me alone.
Yeah. I always like to point to that one XKCD comic about free speech. Like, free speech means the government can't arrest you for what you're saying, but other people don't have to entertain your bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, that counts for both sides, honestly. I mean, like,
yeah, it's
everybody. If you don't want to hear it, don't associate.
Exactly. I mean, there's a lot of people who don't like the things that I say, and that's fine. Like, cool. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, even my close friends that don't agree with, like, you know, I get a lot of people like, you have your personal politics and you don't talk to anybody you disagree with. I'm like, well, that's not actually true. Like, a lot of my don't agree with me on most of everything. But, you know, we still work through our differences. Like, it's all about communication and talking through it.
Yeah.
And you have to approach that in a responsible manner and also with a level of tact and empathy. A lot of these guys in these groups are struggling because they don't go forward into these conversations with that tact and empathy.
Yeah.
Which further isolates them from the rest of the fandom, and it kind of keeps driving them into this group, and it's like a feedback mechanism, you know? They get polarized by the people they're with in this group, and when they leave the group, they've been kind of radicalized, and they say these incendiary things.
Mm-hmm.
And when they say these things, other people react, and they're like, oh, this is proof that I needed this group all along. They go back to the group, and it keeps feeding and building on itself. And it's really sad. Like, I just want them all to, like, you know, I wish they could get out and realize that most of the fandom is really chill and awesome. And yeah, you can just participate in that, and it's great. You don't have to be stuck in this sort of really nasty group, and you don't have to feel like the world is out to get you, because it's not, you know? It's a really magical place, and you have a ton of friends, you just haven't met them yet. You gotta talk to people. And, you know, they feel... Like, I wrote an article about this, and those feelings of... Yeah, those feelings of isolation and being targeted, and often they're not... they're struggling in their own personal life with either depression, getting into college, their social lives, not having a lot of friends, not having a very supportive family. So they're seeking out these groups to fill in those voids of friendship and belonging. And these are really toxic people who are actively seeking people who are more able to be manipulated, because they just really need these social groups. And it's really sad to see. And I'm not exactly certain yet how we can reach these people and help them.
I mean, like, and that's a very sort of, that's a good point to sort of get off from, in that if Badge is actually asking a particular question, like, with all the people that are constantly griefing you, don't you necessarily get paranoid about people, for instance, or in the sense of worrying that there is some sort of ulterior motive when somebody attempts to approach you on something? Like, how do you sort of tell when that's happening?
Oh, man. I do get a lot of bait. I get a lot of DMs where people are like, I have secrets. Most of them are very obvious. And I'm like, oh, you're 12 and you're trying to troll me. That's adorable. I should tell you when I was a troll back in, like, 2004. but
share troll stories.
Oh, God. Please, no. I was such an asshole. I got better. And everybody else can get better, too. It's just about maturing, getting older, being more empathetic with people. And, you know.
I mean... Like, it's interesting that you say that about empathy and everything like that. And I mean, a lot of people would paint you as this monster. the thing is that most I've seen some of the things that have been said about you, for instance, and they come across as though, like, you're, like, you know, restricting them in some way or form, and that you're actively doing all of these things to them. Like, how does one get from one narrative to the next?
You know, it probably does feel to them like I am going out of my way to attack them. I post a lot of their, the quotes verbatim of the things they say in order to try and keep people from joining these groups and getting sucked into this. Because I don't want them to keep recruiting, and I don't want them to keep finding vulnerable people and exploiting them. But to the people who are in these groups, it probably feels like a very personal attack that I'm going after them. It's very difficult. I want to reach these people, but at the same time, my personal time is very limited. I work a lot. Yeah. I have a family. So I can't devote like the hours and hours and hours to personally one-on-one talk to everybody in this fandom as much as I wish I could. So it's probably a perceived feeling of being attacked by me. And then that gets reinforced by the people that are in the group. You know, Dio is evil. Dio has done these things. Dio doxes people. I've never doxed anyone. But yeah, there's all sorts of like, and the narrative keeps getting crazier as they keep trying to struggle to find reasons why they're attacking me. And, you know, they have to justify mm-hmm. it, because if they don't justify it, then they're the assholes. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to be the assholes. They want to be the heroes of the story. You know, the personal narrative that they carry with them isn't, I am an asshole. It is, I am defending the furry fandom from this menace.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah. So in order to, you have to justify that, and the justification and the rationale behind that is Dio must be evil. Dio does terrible things. What are the things that she does? I think right now they're going around calling me a terrorist, which is rather extreme, but, you know, they say I dox people. I've never doxed anybody. They doxed me. Hilarious. So there's a little hypocrisy there. Lots of really strange things. I think my favorite one was that I was blackmailing Kage into making two be banned from Anthrocon, even though, one, I'm not blackmailing Kage. We've never really talked. And two, isn't banned from Anthrocon at all. So the whole premise of this story is like complete bullshit. Like, if you look into it, you're like, wait, two isn't banned from Anthrocon. Kage isn't being blackmailed. None of this is real. Mm. Oh my god, I'm an asshole. So it's like, you don't want people to feel that way. But if you've dedicated a couple of months to being nasty at somebody online, and then you realize that the person you've been nasty to is just another human being on the other end of a computer,
yeah,
you know, that feels bad. You know, nobody wants to feel that way. You don't want to feel bad about the things you've done for so long and how much time you've invested into this group.
And it's something, it's something you feel that you believe in, like some valiant cause, which was shown to be like a, I don't know, like a straw man, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, they feel, and it feels empowering as well. They feel like they're fighting back in this culture war. They feel like they're doing good by participating in this group. And, you know, in other ways in their lives, they feel powerless, and this gives them a sense of, you know, doing something and being part of a group and doing some meaningful effort in the world. It's, I really wish that they would just, like, go down to their local homeless shelter or soup kitchen, you know, join Big Brothers Big Sisters, some other more local event to volunteer.
Habitat for Humanity.
Yes. Oh my god, I love Habitat for Humanity. We have built so many houses in this area, and it's great. You know, you learn real skills. If you're not a very handy person, you show up, they'll teach you how to do stuff. And, you know, and then you're building houses for people who need homes. Hmm. And that's a really great way to make friends. So these guys, like, if they just maybe spend this time instead of being angry online, they go out into the real world and they're doing this real volunteering. They're meeting people. They're making friends. They're having a very good impact on their local communities. And it's going to improve their moods. It's just a very beneficial thing to do. You're benefiting the community. You're benefiting yourself. And I really wish they'd be spending their time like that rather than being angry and racist online.
Yeah. So I've got two questions here. I'm going to start with the one from Tanya. She mentions, or she says, how do you find that window where you have a chance to change a mind that's deep into these toxic hate groups? How do you recognize it? And then from Badge, he says, do you think that they check under their beds at night to make sure that you aren't there?
I did have one of them say in their chats that they had nightmares about me. And
Whoa.
That was...
Wow.
Yeah, they had a nightmare that I broke into their house and I trashed it and then made fun of them. And like, that felt kind of like, that was weird watching that. Like, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about being the literal boogeyman of somebody's nightmares.
I just imagine this Simpsons-esque ha ha
pointless. Yeah, I'm just like, I don't know how to respond to that. I'm like, it's kind of funny, it's kind of sad.
Find it kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finding a window for how to reach these. I mean, I've reached not a lot of alt furries, and they hate this, at least like Len and Blumir, and you know, the people who actually one-on-one talk with me figure out pretty quickly that I'm just some average lady who likes stuff, and you know, we have a lot of common ground. So we don't really need to have this sort of fight, and it's finding that window is difficult. If somebody doesn't respect your humanity, they don't believe that you have the right to exist, then they're not going to listen to anything you say, and you're wasting your time. If there's no respect, if there's no belief in your existence, you can't change their mind. So what you need to be instead of finding the window of opportunity is people who aren't that far gone. Or if you have a friend, you already have this connection with somebody where they trust you and they respect you, and you see your friend is falling into a bad group or something like that, then you should reach out. That's the important part, is looking out for our friends, because that's where we can make the most impact. And because random strangers on the internet come and say, hey man, you're doing a bad thing, isn't going to work out that well. Dumpster Cryptid is somebody who, like, 8 years ago yelled at me about eating meat. And at the time, I was super angry and I did not listen to them and I didn't like them. And you know what? Over the years, though, I've thought about that. And now I'm a vegetarian. So sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And you never really know if you've had that impact and how long it's going to take to kind of work on somebody before they realize, you know, what also, you've said is important.
I suppose also part of that is just approaching it with a little bit of, like, a little bit of empathy instead of this militant attitude. That's also a very quick way to scare someone off of your cause, is to be angry about it.
Yeah, but I mean, and like, the weird thing is that it doesn't necessarily, like, I've followed this for at least the past year now, as to what's been going on. I've been, I don't know, it's always surprising to find that, like, every time that like I've approached somebody who's gone on about it, they've never really, like, called anybody out. Like, names, the only names out there would be things like Len, for instance, and
like the really loud, you know, ones.
Yeah, the really loud ones. And I mean, like, it's that entire idea with Two, for instance. I mean, a large amount of people actually hope that he might turn around. But the thing is that it's not up to us to be able to sort of, like, force that issue or anything like that. It just makes things a bit more awkward, I guess. Because as a small group, we all have our own opinions. You could be right-wing if you really want to be right-wing. That's perfectly fine. You'd be left-wing. You can be, you know, alt-right. You can be alt-left if you have to. You know, but, I mean, at the end of the day, why would you want to stand for anything like that? So the question that I'm really getting down to is that, like, the push towards sort of politicizing, because I know that this is a question that's been asked quite often, why politicize the furry fandom in any way, shape, or form? Like, why continually draw attention to it?
Well, for one, there's only one actual organized group in the furry fandom whose goal is pushing politics in the fandom, and that's all. Who is there? They have a leadership structure, and the leadership has specifically stated, which I have a video of, of them forming the group specifically to push alt-right politics in the fandom. So you don't see this in conservatives, and you don't see this in liberals, and you don't see this in leftists. It's just this one group that is pushing politics in the fandom as an organized group. I mean, I talk politics and current events because I'm a human being in a society. But I'm not, like, organized with another group of people to, like, raid, go after people or something like that. And so they're doing these things as an organized group for politics. And there's no other group doing that at this time.
It's mostly individuals, isn't it? I mean, like, I've had my fair share of conversations about this. Like, don't you think this is going too far?
Yeah, I mean, it's, like, I've always been political, but it didn't really matter when I had, like, 300 followers. So now that I've got, like, more people are like, you have to stop being political. I'm like, well, it's kind of important to me. I don't live in a very... Where I live isn't necessarily super safe or LGBT community. It isn't the best as far as racism in America. And in my own life, my job, there's a lot of persecution, being that only 2% of millwrights country are female. So I don't get to work with other women. I don't get to see that. So a lot of this, a lot of your whole life is political, whether you want to give it that term or not. How society is structured is a part of, you know, how we experience and how we go about our day, the rights and freedoms we have, implicit or explicit. So I don't mind people being political, as individuals. I don't really like political groups in the furry fandom, because when you start organizing people, you know, you're dividing the fandom from being furries, you know, which are made up of individuals, to being, you know, this furry group versus that furry group. And I keep getting added to furry groups in their minds, part of this narrative. Like there's a furry Illuminati secret group that's controlling the fandom.
For Illuminati?
Yeah. So, and whoever you talk to, like, the for Illuminati varies. Like, usually it's me and Dogpatch Press. Sometimes it's Kage. Sometimes Pepper Coyote has been added in there. It kind of depends. Like, there isn't another group for them to fight. So they have to make up this group. They have to just throw in people they don't like, and they're like, that's, and then they outline that, and they're like, that's the group of people we're against. It's like not really a group. These are people I've maybe talked to twice. Vex, who is very left wing. He's a friend of mine. Like, we're not in a group. It's just we're friends. There's no organized leftist group that we're controlling the fandom. And so it's really strange to see, like, how odd it is that somebody sits inside a political furry group and they're like, I hate political furry groups. And you're like, you realize, what are you doing, dude? Yeah, I'm like, I have no idea. I'm like, that's a really strange personal belief to be. It's sort of like cognitive dissonance there between the two ideas of, I hate furry political groups, but I'm also in a furry political group. But my group is okay, and this made-up group is not.
Sorry.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense.
Yeah. I know, Frankie is saying, you know, right-wing is okay, alt-right is an ethno-state white supremacy thing. It's really dangerous. Also manages to say, alt-furry is a shite post-provoking tactic used by edgelords, normal right, and even left-leaning people. He personally disagrees with a lot of the left-wing, but find the name alt-furry to be stupid as fuck.
It is a stupid name, and... You know, maybe I can count that as a blessing that they gave themselves a really stupid name. Because if I tell people about, you know, there's this group and they're toxic and they've done these bad things to conventions like Califer, and they've caused trouble for conventions like Denver, and Anthro Ohio, and there's Fia, they caused trouble there too. So you're like, if you frame it as I mean, even if we completely ignore politics, like, if we would manage to cut that away from the problem, we have a group that has attacked multiple furry conventions and caused, you know, tens and tens of thousands of dollars in damage to our own furry culture. And why would you want to be a part of that? I don't understand. You're like, I'm making furry great again. I don't understand how participating in a group that harms furry conventions makes furry a better place or a better environment.
So some people would argue that, I mean, we're talking openly about all of these things. We're talking, I mean, at the end of the day, we're here, we're online, we're live. If anybody ever wanted to actually make any kind of conversation or ask any kinds of questions, they're more than welcome to do so. There are people who are listening on the phone app and everything like that. I know that, what's it, Yotes at this point is asking a particular question. Like the opinion on the fuck off Nazi for badges that are being handed out at Euroferens feels that they're a bit proactive. 100% agrees with the movement, but forcing the idea out there in the form of these badges kind of seems like it's bringing too much attention to these extremists. Like, what exactly is the sort of call on that? I mean, it's one thing sort of like saying that in your personal capacity, but it's another thing sort of, I guess, pushing a badge like that onto a person who's getting there. I think that there was a comic recently that was released that sort of had, you know... it was like an arbitrary subject, and like, you know, I don't like child molesters or something like that, you know.
Human trafficking.
Everybody agrees that, yes, human trafficking, yeah. But I mean, it could be easily connected to that as well. Like, what's the thinking behind it? I mean, because I know that you've personally said that the badges are a good idea. What makes them a good idea?
Well, I can only speak for myself. And if anybody is interested, Euroferens, both the director and the con itself have released statements that you can find that were printed in the con book and the daily Euroferens. And I really recommend reading those because it's a lot longer and more in depth. And it gives their specific reason why they gave these ribbons away. But as for me, like, there is a group of around roughly 300-ish individuals in the furry fandom. And they're from all over the world. Some of them are in Germany. And, you know, we have them in our culture. Like, there are 300 people who are part of this alt-right. Even if they are not alt-right themselves, they are in a group that is led by alt-right, far-right leading, you know, pro-ethno-state, pro-genocide group. And when their leadership was like that, the group is skewed. You know, the information that gets in is curated through these people. So the group itself is slowly, like a pressure cooker, radicalizing. And that's dangerous. Recently had a thing called, like, Pizzagate. And it's all nonsense, but the nonsense eventually got far enough that one person just took one unstable person, took a AR-15 and went to this pizza parlor and shot it up. And, you know, it only takes one person who gets this crazy message, who gets this group that radicalizes them, gets them scared, gets them angry. It only takes one person to cause a lot of damage and a lot of tragedy. So I think this proactive stance is a good thing, both in deterring people from joining this group and entering into that pressure cooker of radicalization, and as a way of making sure that these people are already in there and, you know, determined, who have made this their identity, and, you know, they've swallowed this and made it, you know, they cling to it. It's theirs. They are alt furry is them. And it keeps them aware that these conventions are a safe space for all people, all furries. And it is not a place for racism. It's not a place for their violence. It's not a place for attacking conventions, not a place for attacking other furries. And we as a community are not going to stand for that.
Hmm. I mean, that's always a fair answer. And I think that, like, I mean, a large amount of the time, people just want a fair answer as to why it exists, how it exists, et cetera, et cetera. It makes it... It's just so interesting that, like, it gets blown out of proportion like this. I mean, some people would say, oh, no, but I mean, like, you look at the furry community and you're sitting there going, alt furries would never, you know, do this or this, or nobody's really a Nazi because of this question or that question. And you're going to sit there going, like, okay, cool. Well, I mean, your rhetoric sounds fine, but where does that come from? Why does that sort of rhetoric continue to be, you know, reiterated that, you know, but I'm not a Nazi. And then on the other hand, they continually sort of go ahead and say, but I'm not a Nazi, but I don't mind the idea of an ethnostate.
Yeah, it gets to be a lot of, you know, I'm not a Nazi. I'm like, okay. You know, they're like, I'm just a white identitarian who wants to uphold the and make a white future. I'm like, actually, those are neo-Nazi talking points. I don't know if you recognize that you are repeating that. And I'm not sure where you got that information. But you should really be wary of wherever you picked that up from. Like, a few months ago, I was in a Discord server with my friends, and there was a young furry in there, and he said... he started talking about white genocide. And I stopped him, and I'm like, do you know what you're saying? And do you, you know, I really don't appreciate the neo-Nazi rhetoric that you're using, and I'm worried about you. And he's like, well, I'm not repeating the, I invented this term. The term. Yes, I know. I'm like, wait, no, you didn't. This is actually a term on, like, Whitaker's site. This is a term on Stormfront. This is a term, you know, the Daily Stormer, the Daily Showa, all these horrible, horrible racist places. And that rhetoric comes from there. These words have meaning, and you've somehow picked them up. But he honestly believed that this was a new word that he had come out. This was a new term that he had invented. And that's how scary this rhetoric can be, because pass it online and not think about it, and it might sit in somebody's head. And especially if you're young and, you know, a little bit more gullible. Yeah, impressionable. But yeah, he had honestly believed that he had invented the idea of white genocide, and that it was a real thing, and that he was very, very scared and very worried about it. And it was very sad to see, you know, somebody who's only like 15 being absolutely terrified that he was going white in America. I'm like, that's not really going to happen. Live in America and you're fairly safe. But where are you getting this information? And you should probably avoid sources. He's like, well, my friends tell me these things. And so it's oftentimes you're not, like, people aren't going to the Daily Stormer's website and reading it. They're not going to Whittaker's website to read it. You know, it's being filtered through InfoWars or Mike Cernovich or more popular and palatable sources. And it gets sort of morphed and made into a more appealing package. And it trickles through friend groups and, you know, it reaches people. And that's one of the reasons we have to be more careful within our own friend groups. When we have a friend who posts something like that, you're like, hey, you know, I'm not sure you're aware of where this information came from or what this rhetoric is, but this terminology you're using. And I'm worried about where you've picked it up. And I think we should talk about this. You know,
So with that, obviously, now we've got another question. With the statement being so bold, that being Nazi furs, fuck off, it's very clear, obviously. But I mean, in the case with the ribbons, it was in a conversation with a friend where they brought up the idea that it's something that can be taken by the Nazi groups and harden them a further, or even provoke a more hostile action. Do you think that there's any valid validity in that statement?
Well, I really don't. Because right now, they already feel validated in being aggressive and antagonistic in our community. They already feel that. Like, these ribbons don't change that idea that they are the persecuted minority and that they have to lash back out. And you see it in the culture at large when the majority of people stand up against this, it takes away their power, their ability to recruit, their ability to get out in the streets, so to speak. Milo Yiannopoulos recently posted that he's spent like all of his personal fortune holding these alt-right rallies, and that he's not getting the support anymore. You know, people aren't helping him. People, you know, all the outpouring against him, all this sort of anti-fascist action, so to speak, limits his ability to reach people, limits his ability to hold these rallies. It limits his ability to reach new minds and express his ideas that can be quite hateful. And Richard Spencer, another who is a neo-Nazi American, has also posted that he is the backlash and people being aware of what he's doing, people being against what he's doing in large groups as solidarity as a community standing against him has made it so that he can't hold these rallies and that he can't share his neo-Nazi ideas with people. At points, he's stated that he's afraid to go outside. He's afraid to have more rallies. He's afraid to keep spreading these ideas. And, like, he doesn't feel welcome. And, like, that's an important thing, is, like, you shouldn't feel welcome to be an angry racist who wants to genocide all Black people from America. Like, that's a really terrible thing. You shouldn't want to kill off 20% of the population. Like, please don't do that. That's a terrible idea. And it's a very, not only toxic to other people will be the targets of your genocide, but it's a toxic idea to hold within yourself that other people are less worthy. That other people are, their lives aren't as valuable as your own. And it's a really sad way to live your life because, you know, you're not reaching out to people. You're not making these friendships and these connections that you could have. It very much limits these people. And so not only are they causing their communities that they're in to suffer by pushing racist or genocidal anti-Semitic language and actions, but it's damaging personally. You know, they're not making the same friends. They're self-isolating in a way.
Okay, that's a lot to take in. I smell straw. I'm assuming that means straw man. Explain how it could be taken as a straw man.
I mean, I suppose if you view yourself, well, I have lots of friends. All of Altfur is my friends. That means I have 300 friends. Like, okay. Of lots of friends. But I mean, I've talked to the people who've left Alt Furry, and you know, they realize very quickly that none of these people, that they were useful idiots, so to speak. That they're being a part of the group really didn't help them as far as, like, it gave them a chat to participate in. But there are lots of active furry chats. Like, if you're looking for that, you can find it elsewhere without the sort of baggage that alt furry carries.
In South Africa alone, we have 15, 20 different, like, group chats.
Over five platforms, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's what's it? There's
WhatsApp, Discord, Twitter.
WhatsApp, Telegram. Discord, Twitter, Telegram.
Facebook, the forum.
Like, you... Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, all these platforms exist. And the thing is that the vast majority of the moderators, for instance, actively say, look, I mean, freedom of speech is allowed. If somebody reacts to it, they'll react to it. That's up to them. What's the word? Another guest 849, the same person who says, I smell straw. I don't think Milo wants to kill all Black people. I mean,
That's a reference to Richard Spencer, though.
Yeah.
Like, but, I didn't say Milo. I said Richard Spencer. Yeah. Milo personally has gone on college campuses during his tour and named and posted the photos of trans students in order to get them attacked on campus. So encouraged physical violence on specific individuals. So that's generally why people don't like him.
Yeah.
Is here's a photo of somebody I don't like, and here's their name, and here are the classes they're in, and you should take action. And then he's very vague about what that action is, but it's generally ends up in somebody getting physically hurt.
I mean, and that's always going to be the question, is that, like, I mean, if we want to talk about strawmen, for instance, the entire idea of, like, you know, reiterating a particular thing, and granted, they did say, you know, stream cut off a little bit, but it sounded like it was going in the direction that he was saying that, you know, what's the word, alt furries should kill, you know, black people, for instance, which isn't necessarily true. It's somebody else who said that, like you said, it was Richard Spencer. But I mean, it's that kind of misinformation. I think that a large amount of the time, one of the things that we can do very well is be more aware of who says what, and then obviously go back and say, okay, I've done this research. I understand what is actually being said, and then make a decision off of that. I don't necessarily think that it should be in any way. Like, I mean, you know what? If there's a divide, there's a divide. So what about it? Is the general question I'm going to ask about it is that, like, you know, it exists and people have their own political leanings, but at no point is it ever fair to say that we should kill this group of people or that we should do this or delegitimize a particular person's, you know, ideas and thoughts and things like that. It's little things like that kind of sort of put it out there. Frankie now also saying a lot of furries, including himself, are concerned about what people interpret as what is Nazi. And that's actually a very, very fair question. You know, what is interpreted as Nazi? In modern American American street politics, wearing a MAGA hat, Make America Great Again, can get you accused of being a Nazi. Are those people going too far who accuse, you know, people wearing MAGA hats of being Nazis? Or is there some sort of truth in there?
Well, I think people, like, you can be accused of being a Nazi. I've been accused of being a Nazi. But, like, there's two ways of interpreting that.
Yeah.
Is you either take it very personally because maybe it strikes a chord in you and you're like, oh no, maybe I am a Nazi. I really need to detest this. And that sort of pushback. Like, somebody calls me a Nazi, I know I'm not a Nazi, and I don't have to, like, I'm not all that worried about it. You know, my words and my actions speak on their own behalf. So it's like, okay, thanks for the trolling statement, you know. It's okay. So if you get called a Nazi and you're Nazi, you can just be like, all right. Thanks, angry person. You know, you can talk to them if you feel like it, if you feel it actually makes a difference. Be like, you know, actually, these are my political beliefs and statements. This is what I stand for, and these are the things I'm really doing in my community, locally, and things like that. Nazi is a very, very specific term, and it means somebody that is, and this is going to be a shortened version of but they, if they got power, and if they could get enough power within the government, there would be a change in laws that remove the rights from other people, specifically ethnic minorities. And that can involve, like, limiting immigration, limiting citizen rights, limiting voting. It can even be as far as, you know, deporting people who've been citizens for a long time. Like, there's been talk about deporting all the black people back to Africa, and there's been talk about, you know, deporting all the people who are Hispanic back to Mexico. And these things stem from a fear that white culture is being lost, or that white people are interbreeding with brown people. And I guess white person plus brown person equals brown person. So if you that's your math, then you're always going to lose if, you know, white person plus brown person equals brown person, white person plus white person equals white person. Now that roll of the dice over time, you're just going to lose. And so that's a very unsettling, scary thought to somebody very firmly believes in white purity. And I don't. And so they take that and they're very afraid. And then they it's a lash out problem. Where if that's what you're afraid of, you have to limit the rights and the personhood of other people in order to enact your legislation, in order to enforce your worldview, to protect what you think needs protected. So Nazis are generally people, if they got power with the government, would be taking the rights from other people, especially ethnic minorities. And it's a long struggle, really. We've seen this before. It's happening again. We just need to be respectful of each other's rights. You can't be trying to take away your neighbor's right to vote or his right to have a family. You shouldn't be pushing for anti-miscegenation laws to come up again in America, or Jim Crow laws, redlining. You know, all of these things are things that are boiled down to being racist and trying to hurt one ethnic group or another. And however that cooks out, like, it is fundamentally, you know, if you're trying to use the government to suppress and hurt people, it's a form of fascism.
So, I mean, with that, obviously, I mean, our interview has been pretty chill most of the time. Somebody's mentioned in chat something about the idea of bragging about being an Antifa terrorist, for instance. What does that necessarily mean? And they've got a link here, but not necessarily.
I don't know.
I'm gonna, like, the thing is that...
Like, I'm clearly not a terrorist, so I'm... And, like, that's the current narrative that's kind of being spun around. They have to keep finding bigger and scarier words to call. People talk to me, and they're like, oh, you know, this Dio girl, she's not that bad. So you gotta make a bigger, a scarier word, you know? Before it was like, Dio is a communist, and then people weren't scared of communist. It wasn't scary enough. So they're like, that didn't work, so we have to give her a new title. So I guess my new title is terrorist. I'm not a terrorist. I do like the Antifa movement in America. It has produced good results. I don't necessarily agree with all of the things that have happened, obviously. And I have my own actions that I'm an individual part of the whatever. And the fact is, like, Antifa or anti-fascism, like, there's no leadership. There's no Richard Spencer. You can't point to somebody and be like, this is a guy holding rallies who has a position of power. You know, what he's saying is a part of a political platform. Antifa doesn't do that. It's just a loose grouping of individuals who have the same, I don't like Nazi. And that makes it both very easy to exploit on the right, because you can say almost anything to Antifa. Even if it's not really connected. Because you can't disprove that somebody is or isn't Antifa. There's, you know, it is a... You don't like Nazis. Like, that's a lot of people. That's, you know, people in government. That's cops. That's far right-wing people. Yeah. That's far left-wing people. That's liberals. It's a very general umbrella to put people on. I think when most people say Antifa, what they mean are black bloc tactics, which are also not necessarily only used on the left. Yeah, like police officers, like, they wear all black and they usually wear masks, and they're doing this as an intimidation tactic. That's what black bloc is. It's a way of being intimidating as a whole group presenting a single front so that one individual can't be the singled one person identified. Identified or singled out. You know, police are doing this, but nobody goes like, oh yes, the Seattle police, those Antifa. You know? Yeah, it's so silly. And you know, Black Bloc is a tactic. It's a long tactic. It's been used in Greece. It's been used in, you know, all over Europe. It's been used all over America. It's not new by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. And in a lot of the world, it's absolutely necessary because they don't have this. America does. And their governments, when they protest politically, are going to find them and going to hurt them and their families.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you are upset with the idea of protesting politically and hiding your face, you should probably think about that in regards of free speech and the abilities you have and the rights you have.
Hmm.
Not a lot of people don't have those rights. Like, I can only speak as an American where I was born with these rights, and I take a, you know, a lot of people take them for granted. But say if I was in, you know, another country that was not quite as kind to its political dissidents, like, there could be a lot of danger in speaking up. Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is that, like, I mean, as you might know, South Africa is in a very sort of interesting position currently, and America's tried to muscle in. And weirdly enough, even by the people here in South Africa, the ones who apparently being pushed into particular sort of areas, sitting there going like, just, you know, take your idea and take it back to America, because at this point there's no need for America to in any way or shape or form sort of get involved with South African politics, because it's not their job. It's local politics. There's no way and there's no reason for America to even get involved with that or change things. There's a whole bunch of people sort of posting here currently. Okay, cool. I'm going to ignore some of these.
I wouldn't pay them much mind. Yeah. They're obviously very upset and probably feel personally slighted. We'll let them just do their thing and ignore it. But yeah, go on. Tell me more about South Africa.
The thing is that, like, I'm a white South African, for instance. I see all of the rhetoric around what's going on, especially in respect to, you know, land reappropriation and so on and so forth. I believe and or agree that land redistribution is necessary. It just needs to be done correctly. A large amount of the time, the mistrust that generally comes towards our own government is particularly because the government in and of itself has shown itself to be nothing but corrupt a large amount of the time. It's mm-hmm. not about the idea of removing, you know, particular land rights, removing this or kicking out a whole group of people. At least this is what I've seen from the rhetoric that came from Cyril Ramaphosa. And the thing is that, like, it would be almost silly for somebody like Cyril Ramaphosa to, you know, go on blanket, you know, take all the land, particularly because he himself is a businessman. He's got a large amount of, you know, cross-political funds in places that he probably wouldn't want to lose money. And that's something that I think is underplayed in respect to what he's been saying. And a large amount of the time, and he's had his talks with the particular groups that are involved here. And that's necessary to note is that, like, I think that Cyril Ramaphosa has a very good head on his shoulders. Although if pressure from places like, and it's been mentioned here a couple of times, Malema and the EFF, which is the Economic Freedom Front, sort of does legitimize a particular group of people, it has been shut down on several points. In fact, I think Cyril Ramaphosa before this weekend even said, you know, here's 7 points of what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it. And it's given me, honestly, a large amount of, like, you know, sort of something to think about is that, like, there is some form of calm in all of that storm. And it's difficult, I think, to be able to sort of listen to both groups and sort of come out going, well, maybe it's not necessarily that good. I mean, yes, trust any kind of government. Like, who actually trusts governments these days, particularly because a lot of it has to do with individualism, and these people want to make sure that they themselves are going to be good going forward.
Like their expensive livelihoods are protected more so than those of the people in the country.
Yes, more so than anybody else. But that's just a capitalist system, isn't it? Like, at the end of the day, weirdly enough, and this is one thing that I do want to say, oddly, is that if you have, if we, say, do things like nationalize the bank, for instance, I'm not necessarily going to be happy with that because there's no secondary group of people that would be able to, what's the word, act as legitimate people who will fact check. Like, funny thing is that I think that people with money want to protect their money, making sure that they have some form of control over the bank. Great. Because who wants to lose money?
Mm-hmm. See, it's, I completely agree with that statement that you made with regards to people not trusting the South African government to handle this well. They haven't handled a lot of things well recently.
No, they really haven't.
Telkom is a monopoly in our country that is a state-owned enterprise. It's not working. Eskom is a state-owned enterprise. Eskom. SAA. They've been shown to be corrupt at the core, and people higher up are skimming off a lot of money that are taxpayers' money. And you want the government, that same government, to be in charge of land redistribution? Like, it's a no-brainer. You want to put people in there who are, if this is going to happen, you want to put people in there who are at least competent and understand the situation, as opposed to, you know, some nepotistic hire who's going to just get as many kickbacks as possible, because that's how the system's been working these past few years with a lot of other enterprises. That's what we're scared of. That's what most of the brouhaha has been with regards to, at least in my mind.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. And the thing is that, like, again, if we had a group, and none of the groups, I just have to say this, like, people say, oh no, the DA is good, or this group is good, or whatever group is good, these political parties, at the end of the day, they're really not that good. None of them actually have any, like, sort of redeeming qualities. But that's our ruling governments currently. These are the people that are constantly out there saying all of these things, we're doing this, we're doing that. It's all just political ease. And, like, if there were a group out there that could actually change that, and there was one group that I kind of agreed with before they got sort of assimilated into the DA, which was, it was run by, I can't remember her name now.
It wasn't Cope, was it?
No, it wasn't Cope, which is another group that I would actively agree with, but just not strong enough to be able to ever come into political majority. I think, typing can be heard. That's just a quick mention, I think.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no worries. It's a multifaceted argument, and we can stand on either side. I just don't necessarily think that it's a bad idea.
Politics, it's how the platform is carried out. You know, is it responsible to the people? Is it democratic? Is it, you know, do you have good watchdogs making sure that it's corrupt? And in the end, if you're doing actions that are for the good of the majority, or that are good for the good of the population, I shouldn't say the majority, but for everybody. And that can be difficult. Like, we can all disagree points of policy and how policy is carried out, because there's a million different ways to enact this and how to enforce those laws. The important part is that in our own government actions, that we are acting with empathy and love and consideration towards each other, and other people.
Yeah, that shouldn't be that difficult.
Yes. It really shouldn't be that difficult. And I can put into a position of power, use it for the greater good of the people that you're actively putting in. It's, weirdly enough, one of the stupidest questions that I've had to ask recently is that, like, I don't even know who my my district councillor is. I don't know who they are. I don't know what their number is. I wouldn't be able to ask them any kind of questions.
Our congressman. I don't know our version of. I suppose that's our version of your local congressman.
But, ja, jy het 'n streeks Yeah, like you've got a district guy. You actually voted for him on a piece of paper.
He's a ward. Yeah. He's a ward coordinator.
Ward counselor.
Ward counselor. Yeah.
Ward counselor. Nice. Yeah. Like, I don't know who mine is. I don't even know where the hell they are. I don't know if they exist. And honestly, and I asked, like, one of the guys that I speak to very, very often is a person who has actively worked on the legislation for land distribution, has actively done everything that is necessary to be able to ensure that everything is done correctly. And he's actively told me, like, there are very, very smart things that he's been talking about. And I talk to him on a daily basis. I ask him, are you doing this? Are you doing this? Are you doing these things? And he literally denies everything that's being sort of thrown out there as, you know, it's going to be a land grab. It's going to be this. It's going to be that. So at least there's some good thought going into it. He's a very, very, like, he's super competent. I mean, he's got a master's degree in politics. I wouldn't expect any less from him. And he's been on radio shows very often. And I'd rather believe him than anything else that's sort of out there. This is my work colleague. I can't necessarily, like, he's pretty much the only person that I smoke with these days, since the vast majority of the people that I used to do that with aren't even with our company anymore. And, like, I can't but trust that. I don't, like, for me, I can't get out of this country if I wanted to or not. The thing is that I'm here and I'm here today and I'm here with people that I want to work with. I think that's pretty much the only kind of idea and ideology that we should go with. We should work together towards a brighter future to make sure that everything that we're doing is done and checked and balanced in the right kinds of way.
Yeah, I agree with that. And that's, you know, that's the thing that's not really being carried to America. Conversation, the nuance is completely lost. You know, speaking as an American, the way that South African politics are represented is grossly and terribly misrepresented, and it is really quite tragic because it's being used and abused by people with their own political.
Yeah.
You know, ideas, yeah. And they're trying to use this as some sort of cudgel to beat their political opponents in America. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's not helping South Africa. It's not helping South Africans, and it's not helping Americans. So why, you know, the misinformation, the lies, it is really hard to see. And it's definitely hard to get the correct information from across the ocean. And I'm so glad that you guys took the time to talk to me today. I'm so glad that I got to hear about this from you directly, rather than, you know, from so many Americans that have had it filtered through whatever channels. Because there's nothing like having direct experience.
No, yeah. It definitely helps being able to talk to people. I mean, with us in the show, it's useful to have and useful and eye-opening, I suppose, to have people from overseas who have first-hand experience with a lot of the political things that are currently, like, in, not in vogue, but in the news, like, in our current issues, like talking to people about, like, what the refugee situation is like in Germany, or what Trump's been doing and what how the US has been handling a lot of its stuff and the rallies and protests and counter protests and all that kind of stuff. It's useful having this sort of first-hand experience or first-hand, you know, accounts of what's going on in different theaters of politics.
Yeah, it's really amazing that we get to have this community world. Absolutely still thrilled by this idea that, you know, I have this machine in front of me that allows me to communicate with wonderful, wonderful people from all the way over in South Africa or wherever else in the world. It's amazing. And if only we could be using this for the betterment of the connection of humanity rather than turning against each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
I think this is as good a point as any to sort of trail off on. We've been gabbing for an hour and 40 minutes now.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, everyone.
I think this has been a very eye-opening conversation. I think that when it comes to the sort of like information that's out there, there's nothing better than talking directly to the people who are involved. This has always been our intention as you know, South Africa, to be able to talk to people who are involved in, you know, probably every now and again a little bit of controversial pieces of information. And I think that hopefully if people do listen to the podcast in full, which will be on YouTube, it's something that we can just sort of reflect on. And thank you very much for giving us that kind of information to reflect on, because it's always been it's been a pleasure having you, honestly.
I'm so grateful you guys had. Thank you for the invite. And I mean, I hope anybody who listens to this can kind of understand that, you know, I don't want anybody to be afraid or worried. And like, my DMs are open, and I know I've said I've got DMs, but I will probably eventually get to all of them, maybe. And I will try to talk to all, like, I really do want to communicate with everybody. So I want people who are listening to feel free to reach out to me. And I will try my very, very best to reach back. I just don't, like, I'm very tired of being a scary character in this narrative, and I'm not very, like, I don't think I sound like a boogeyman. So hopefully, like, with better communication, you know, I do believe all of this can be worked out. I mean, maybe not the big problems of believing that certain groups of people are people, but beyond that, like, the petty disagreements between like taxation and you know, things like that, we can definitely
Twitter DM's the best way to reach you, or Discord?
Definitely not Discord. I don't usually check it. I'm on Telegram. I'm also on Twitter. I would say Twitter's probably the best way to reach me, but it is very much swamped. It can take me a little bit to reach back to people. If you don't get a message, like, message me back the next day, and it'll pop back to the top of the chat. Hopefully that works. And I am really sorry. I'm just crazy busy.
No. We understand. Thank you for taking some time out to have a chat with us.
Oh, no, of course. Thank you, guys.
All right. Okay. Well, as we're wrapping up, for those of you guys who know our show quite well, I spend the next hour and a half. Is it 2.5 hours? It's 2.5 hours. 2 hours and 15 minutes now. Playing a little bit of music afterwards. I'm going to be playing whatever music I can sort of get my hands on. Obviously, for those of you guys who are listening, my playlist is online. And if you guys want to be able to just, you know, put down any kind of music, any kind of requests, go for it. I will be up in about maybe 7 or so minutes, so just hold on for me. I'll be there in a jiffy. And yeah, so we'll be running to 12 o'clock our time. It is now 9:45, so yeah, 2 hours and 15 minutes. But thank you again. That's me. Wow. I forget names terribly badly. I've still forgotten.
Sorry. Use words.
Just help me, please. Thank you, just help me.
Dio?
Dio, thank God.
It was going so well.
Oh, no.
Come on, dude. Get your shit together. I know it's late. Maybe cut the music stream a little bit short and get a decent night's sleep, okay?
You've been working too hard, my friend.
Okay. I'll try to figure that out somehow.
No worries.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you. Thank you, Dio, for joining us this evening. Check us out again next week, Sunday. We'll obviously, throughout the week, update as to who we have that day. And yeah, hope you guys enjoy the music after this. And again, thank you for listening.
Yeah, we shall see you guys again next week. And Dio, again, thank you so much for being on. Yeah, we might chat to you in future. Otherwise, have a good week for the rest of you guys.
Cheers, guys.